Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. A federal appeals court last night blocked the immediate release of 17 Guantanamo prisoners. Next, it will fully consider a lower court's ruling to free the men onto U.S. soil. The government is fighting that ruling, although it is willing to release the Uyghurs to another country. Joining me to talk about who the Uyghurs are, why they remain locked up, and what's happened to plans to close Guantanamo, Susan Baker Manning. She's a pro bono attorney for the men. Nuri Turkel of the Uyghur American Association, and Noel Francisco, he's previously with the Bush Justice Department. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Diane.
Susan Baker Manning, if I could start with you, please explain last night's ruling and exactly what led up to it.
Sure. As everyone will recall, in the summer, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Boumediene that the men at Guantanamo could seek release through habeas corpus. Our clients have done that. They've been pursuing habeas for about 3 years now. And on October 7th, the judge in my client's habeas case ruled that the government had no basis for continuing to imprison the men. And that was based on an admission by the government that the men were no longer enemy combatants. The only theory the government has ever really put forward for imprisoning people at Guantanamo is this enemy combatant theory. So the court ruled that based on this admission that the men were not enemy combatants, they must be released, and they must be released in just a few days.
Did that mean that the U.S. no longer considered them a danger to the people of the United States?
Well, there's never been any proof that they are in any way a danger to the United States. The government has had every opportunity to prove that in a court of law, and they have indeed foregone that opportunity through this admission that the men are not enemy combatants.
All right. So yesterday's ruling means that despite the fact that they were declared no longer enemy combatants, mm-hmm. overturned the decision that they should be released immediately?
What the D.C. Circuit did last night is the D.C. Circuit has agreed to a government request to stay the order until the D.C. Circuit can decide on the merits of the appeal. Once the judge issued his order that the men be released within just a few days here in the United States, the only place they can be released, the government immediately appealed and sought a stay. So that just keeps them in prison while the government goes to the circuit and tries to convince it that the judge was wrong.
And what's your argument as to why they ought to be released right now?
They ought to be released right now because they're innocent men. The government concedes that they're not enemy combatants, and the government has been trying for years to find another country that will take the Uyghurs. It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen.
Susan Baker Manning, she's an attorney representing the Uyghur detainees at Guantanamo. She's representing them on a pro bono basis. If you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Noel Francisco, what are the government's arguments against allowing these men into the United States?
Well, Diane, the basic argument right now on the stay issue was that they shouldn't be ordered to be forced into the United States, at least until the United States has been able to make its best case to the Court of Appeals as to why these individuals ought to be held. And the problem is here the government is really facing three bad alternatives. It agrees now that these men are no longer enemy combatants, and that is the basis for holding these men at Guantanamo Bay. But it now has to figure out what to do with them. the ideal, or the, I guess the first answer would be to send them back to China, the country of their home. But the problem is that we're parties to the torture convention, and we can't send them back to a country where we can't be assured that they'll be treated humanely. And thus far, we haven't been able to get that kind of assurance from the Chinese government. We also have not yet been able to find a third country to send them to. A few years ago, Albania agreed to take a handful of these folks, but we haven't been able to secure a similar agreement. So that leaves the United States. Now, the problem with releasing them into the United States is that even if let's just assume for the sake of argument these men were mistakenly picking up. They never were enemy combatants, and originally they weren't hostile to the United States. Well, the fact of the matter is we've been holding them against their will for 7 years. Rightly or wrongly, that's a fact, and it's water under the bridge. So the question is today, would it be safe to release these individuals into the United States? And I think the government's position is that it's at least right now, it's not willing to say that it's safe to release these individuals into the United States if it can find an adequate alternative. And now, given that it's decided that they aren't enemy combatants, there is, so to speak, a fire underneath the government to resolve this situation. And I expect that you're going to see more movement in the next couple of months than you've seen in the past, because now there's a reason to try to resolve this. They don't have a theory to hold them apart from this theory that they need to hold them while they're trying to resolve the issue.
Noel Francisco, he's an attorney in private practice. He was former associate counsel to President George W. Bush. Also former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice. Turning to you now, Noel Turkel. Tell us about these people, who they are. Give us some of their background and why they were picked up in the first place.
The Uyghurs are Turkic people who live in Central Asia, in China and neighboring Turkic states, including Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan. These the Uyghurs are forced to leave their country because of the ongoing political pressure and social discrimination. That includes the 17 men who's currently held in Guantanamo. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Chinese government increased the pressure on the Uyghur youth, particularly, and it left them with very little social economic opportunities.
Why?
Because Uyghurs, like the Tibetans, have been subject to brutal oppression by the Chinese government since the foundation of People's Republic of China. The Uyghurs are ethnic minority, like the Tibetans. They are Muslim, practice moderate version of Sufi Islam. And they live in a vast region that has rich natural resources, that is a strategically important region to the Chinese government. In order to fully control the Uyghur region, Chinese government have stepped up the pressure on the indigenous people, and give very little or no political freedom to the Uyghurs.
What do you make of the U.S. government statement that says the Uyghurs in Guantanamo are dangerous men and therefore cannot be released into the United States?
There's no evidence to prove that claim. Uyghurs always been a friend of the United States. Uyghurs never hold a grudge against the United States. Even the people who locked up in Guantanamo last 7 years still respect Americans' democratic freedom. That has been provided to fellow Uyghur Americans in the American society. There are about 1,000 Uyghurs living in the United States. You can find them at universities, various academic scientific field, and they've been a contributing member of American society.
Nuri Turkel, he's past president of the Uyghur American Association. He's also an attorney in private practice. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Back to you, Susan. Court documents apparently contain partial transcripts of Guantanamo hearings where Uyghurs have admitted that they went to Afghanistan for weapons training. How do you explain that? What were they doing?
Well, I think what the men were doing in Afghanistan and why they were there varies. A number of these men ended up in Afghanistan because they were on their way to a third place. A number of them were on their way to Turkey to find work. There's a weird community in Turkey. A number of them were looking for just a way out of the economic and political oppression in China. It's absolutely true that these men are philosophically opposed to the Chinese government by and large, and that they recognize the oppression of the Uyghur people. Now, these supposed admissions
in the transcripts,
if you look at them, I think that you will find that they're by no stretch of the imagination as clear-cut as the government makes them out to be. And in talking to these men, you know, I have talked to these men. I've asked them what they were doing there, why they were there. They do not say that they were going there because they were interested in some sort of violent uprising against China. Some of them...
Here, let me just go to a portion of the transcript. Mm-hmm. The government's brief cites partial transcripts of the Gitmo tribunals. Question, what was the reason you wanted to receive some of the training on the AK-47, the Kalashnikov? Answer, if something happened in China against the government, then I will go back to fight against the Chinese government.
Frankly, he sounds a lot like Robert E. Lee to me. If there's a fight, he will stick with his country. But that is not in any way, shape, or form the same thing as planning a fight against China in real life.
Susan Baker Manning, she's an attorney representing the Uyghur detainees at Guantanamo. She's doing that on a pro bono basis. We'll be right back. And we are back talking about the release and the Uyghurs who are being held at Guantanamo. Joining us now by phone from the Chinese embassy here in Washington is spokesman and press counselor Wang Bodong. Mr. Wang, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you, Derek. Good to be with you again.
Thank you. Tell us why China wants the U.S. to send the Uyghurs currently being held in Guantanamo to China.
Well, Diane, my government's position on this issue has been consistent and explicit. First of all, those people are terrorist suspects. Mainly against China, and who were captured during the Afghanistan war. And they are also members of the so-called East Turkestan Islamic Movement, which is a UN-sanctioned terrorist group. And since they are Chinese citizens, and they have been involved in terrorist activities against China So according to the relevant international laws and the Chinese laws, China has been requesting the repatriation of these people.
All right. So, Mr. Wang,
yes.
If, in fact, you believe all of these men are terrorists, how would China handle them if they were returned to China? How would you treat them?
Well, China is a country, ruled with law, and China has a series of laws on handling terrorism or terrorists. So they will be treated strictly according to the relevant Chinese laws.
So what does that mean? Would they be immediately placed in a Chinese prison?
Well, in China, I think the procedures are similar in any other countries. They will be undergo the relevant investigations, and they will be questioned and a kind of a fair and a just investigation. I think they will be treated in a fair and just.
All right. Let me ask you one last question. The New York Times recently reported that an attack, which China claimed was a Uyghur attack on police, was actually witnessed as a battle between two groups of men in police uniforms. What can you tell us about that?
All right. Yeah, we took note of the report in the New York Times, and we honestly took it very seriously. And we actually shared that report with the relevant authorities in China. I should say that an investigation was conducted about the allegation.
And it
turned out that the allegation that it's a kind of internal fighting among the police is totally unwarranted.
You're saying it was not the police fighting among themselves?
No, definitely not. But I should say that according to the investigation, two Uyghur terrorists were involved in the incident, and one of them was actually wearing a police suit.
You're saying he was wearing a camouflage suit.
Right.
All right. One last question, Mr. Wang. Is China putting pressure on other countries not to accept the Uyghurs from Guantanamo?
Excuse me, Darren?
Is China putting any pressure on other countries not to accept the Uyghurs?
Our basic position on this issue is that since those suspected terrorists are Chinese nationality, are of Chinese nationality, they should be returned to China.
All right, I want to...
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Spokesman and press counselor for the Chinese Embassy, Wan Bodong. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much.
All right. And turning to you, Nuri Turkel, what does the U.S. believe? What do you believe would happen to the Uyghurs if they were returned to China?
If the Uyghurs return to China, there's no doubt they will be locked up, as the embassy official indicated, that they will be subject to long imprisonment, torture. And I like to respond to that claim that the embassy official was saying, that anyone in China can be a terrorist. They even called the Dalai Lama a terrorist not too long ago. Anyone who peacefully express opposition to the Chinese government policies can be terrorists. The official was talking about that there is a rule of law in China, and that's just laughable. China does not have a rule of law. They don't have independent judiciary. They call someone terrorist before even going through a legal process. So it is unbelievable that the embassy official is calling that China is a country with a rule of law. The Amnesty International Human Rights Watch, even the State Department, acknowledged and reported that China has been using war on terror as an excuse to prosecute Uyghur political dissent. And it's been documented that the Xinjiang, that's the Chinese name for the region, is the only province where Uyghur political prisoners can face death penalty. That is the situation today.
I know you went to visit five other Uyghurs who were released from Guantanamo and sent to Albania. Is it true that the U.S. sent them there without notifying their attorneys?
It is true. We heard late on Friday, literally one business day before a major hearing, that those five men have been transported.
Noel Francisco, how do you account for that?
Diane, I wasn't involved in that, so I can't specifically say. But I think what all this points to, though, is the real risk that we face when we draw courts into these types of issues. Here, there are serious diplomatic repercussions to whatever alternative the United States chooses. If it chooses to admit these individuals or some of them into the United States, then I think, as Mr. Turkel or maybe some of his colleagues have noted in the media, that would be viewed as a victory for the Uyghurs against the Chinese government. Rightly or wrongly, that's a serious diplomatic repercussion to that decision. There are similar repercussions if they decide to send them to a third country, and obviously very serious issues arise if you decide to send them back to China, something that thus far we have decided we cannot do. When you draw courts into it, you interfere with a very delicate diplomatic dance that occurs between people who are trained and professionals in dealing with how to basically cut compromises and deals and exert, you know, subtle coercive pressure on some countries and other countries to do this or that. Courts are fundamentally incapable, though, of making those kinds of judgments and those kinds of decisions. And that's why traditionally courts have stayed their hand when it came to international disputes that turned on such a delicate diplomatic balance. So I think that what we're hearing here is it really exemplifies one of the real dangers of drawing courts into this type of decision.
Susan Baker Manning.
Yeah, it's not that we are drawing the courts into this. The Constitution is what gives the courts a role in this situation. These men have a constitutional right to the writ of habeas corpus. They have a right to be freed if there's no basis for their detention. The government concedes that there's no basis for their detention. This idea that that they can't be freed into this country because of diplomatic issues just totally disregards the idea that we can't imprison men indefinitely because it's convenient for us to do so and inconvenient for us to free them.
Diane, if I could respond to that.
Sure.
I think there's no question that and I think the United States probably agrees that given the changed status of these individuals, they ought to be freed. The question is, where should they be released to? And there are a range of alternatives. Every one of those alternatives has a diplomatic consequence. To have a court come in literally just weeks after the final determination made by the United States that these individuals are no longer enemy combatants, to have a court come in just weeks after that substantially interferes with a very delicate process for deciding amongst which of the alternatives we ought to pursue in terms of freeing these individuals. So I don't think it's a question of whether they ought to be freed. It's a question of how they ought to be freed. And I think the right answer is to at least give the United States a little bit of time to wade through these alternatives and balance the various diplomatic issues that are at stake here.
Susan.
The problem with that argument is the government has been looking for a place to send these men since at least 2003 and possibly earlier. The government cleared the great majority of these men for release in 2003. It's had 5 years to figure this out. It's approached apparently over 100 countries to see who would take them, and no country has agreed to do so. How long are these men going to sit in jail because we can't figure out what to do with them?
It's interesting. We've just had a report from the Associated Press that the U.S. military says it's dropping war crimes charges against five other Guantanamo Bay detainees. So what happens to them, Susan?
What happens to the men who the charges are dropped against? They stay in Guantanamo. You know, the government certainly has indicated that it intends to prosecute some number of people on war crimes charges. But when the government drops the charges against a Guantanamo detainee, that doesn't mean that he goes home. That means that he stays in the exact same cell he was in before and stays there without charge.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. There were reports earlier that President Bush planned to close Guantanamo. He made that statement back in 2006. Now, both the New York Times and the Financial Times have reported that President Bush has decided not to close Guantanamo during his presidency. What's changing there, do you believe, Noel?
Well, Diane, I don't know that anything's really changing. I think that there is broad agreement that we eventually want to close Guantanamo Bay. The problem is nobody has yet figured out a good way to do it. At a minimum, at Guantanamo Bay, there is a good handful of individuals who I think probably all would agree are very, very dangerous individuals.
A handful,
including these Uyghurs. So I think that there's a reason why you need some place like Guantanamo Bay to put at least this handful of individuals. Now, if you don't put them in Guantanamo Bay, where would you put them? I think what the New York Times reported was the initial thought was maybe to put them in Kansas. Well, there was a pretty loud political outcry from the political leaders in Kansas that they don't want that. You probably find that everywhere else. So the key is not deciding that you want to shut down Guantanamo Bay, but figuring out how you can do it. And that's not an easy question for which anyone has come up with a ready solution.
All right, let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Carrboro, North Carolina. Good morning, Charlie. You're on the air.
Hey, Diane, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, I just think it's ironic to think that we won't release these Uyghur prisoners to China because they might face torture there, given the reputation of Guantanamo Bay for the procedures there.
Nuri Turkel, do you want to speak to that?
Yes, I'd like to point out that first I'd like to respond to Noel's assertion that it will cause a diplomatic problem if the Uyghurs release in the United States. As an Uyghur American, as someone who came here for education and political freedom, it's hard to believe that the United States is considering a possible uncomfort in the communist government's minds and their system. It is unbelievable, just beyond my thinking that the United States is even worried about how communist China will respond to it. To answer the gentleman's question, yes, Uyghurs have suffered political oppression. Yes, it is ironic that they're escaping from Chinese oppression and end up being in Guantanamo. But the reality is that the Uyghurs should never have been to Guantanamo.
Susan Baker Manning, have these Uyghurs to whatever information we have they suffered torture at Guantanamo Bay, putting aside the issue of being incarcerated for all this time? What kind of conditions have they been subjected to?
Sure. The men have not been subject to the most egregious forms of torture we've heard about, waterboarding and the like. They have been held for almost 2 years in solitary confinement. Until very recently, they were in a solitary confinement facility. This was long after they had been declared ready for release by the U.S. government, and still we're holding them in these tiny metal boxes for years on end. That is maddening and has been very bad for them. Now, they have also been subject to various forms of abuse, including abuse by the Chinese government while in Guantanamo. In September of 2002, the U.S. allowed Chinese intelligence officials into the prison, as reported in the media, softened them up for the Chinese media or for the Chinese officials, and they were subject to interrogation and explicit threats. There were a number of them who were told that if they were ever went back to China, they would be killed. Told that flat out directly by the Chinese while in Guantanamo under our care.
So you would like to see them released into the United States?
It's the only place for them to go. They can't go back to China under U.S. law. It's utterly unrealistic to think that there's any third country that will take them because it hasn't happened. The only place left to go is here.
Susan Baker Manning, she's an attorney representing Uyghur detainees at Guantanamo. Short break. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by this and other NPR stations, by the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org, and by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, announcing Kids Count, a state-by-state look at child well-being and juvenile justice reform at aecf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the financial crisis and the bailout with New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. He just won the Nobel Prize in Economics. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Joining us now as we continue our discussion about events at Guantanamo, recent court rulings. Joining us now by phone is Tony Fratto. He's Deputy White House Press Secretary. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Indeed. The U.S. military today says it's dropping war crimes charges against five Guantanamo Bay detainees. I gather this follows the resignation of a Guantanamo prosecutor who alleged that the military suppressed evidence favorable to the defense of another detainee. What do these developments tell us about how the process at Guantanamo is working?
Well, actually, the process at Guantanamo for looking at the cases involving all the detainees that go through the military commissions process have a judge who has the opportunity to review all the evidence. And if evidence is appropriate to be presented and the judge wants to see it and can make a determination as to whether it's germane and admissible in the courtroom there, he can make that decision. And I think it's probably by far the most open process for any military-related judicial activity in the history of dealing with these kinds of cases.
Of course, back in 2006, President Bush said he wanted to close Guantanamo. Mm-hmm. The New York Times is reporting today he has decided not to do that while he remains in office.
Diane, I think we would take issue, and I know we do, with the New York Times reporting today, at least in their headline and the lead of their story. Our position on Guantanamo has not changed one bit from where we were a week ago or 6 months ago or 2 years ago, indeed, when the president said talked about his intention to close Guantanamo. It has never been the question of whether we want to close Guantanamo or whether we'd like to close Guantanamo. The question is, what do you do with the detainees who are there in Guantanamo in a legal way and in a way that is safe both for the detainees themselves and for American citizens? There are judicial proceedings underway for a great number of the detainees who remain there. We should remember that we have also been able to release upwards of 600 detainees over the years. So the State Department, Department of Defense have made really dramatic and steady progress in processing and dealing with the detainees. We have
all right. Not only, just for fact's sake, it wasn't only the New York Times. The Financial Times had a similar report last week.
Yeah,
the
I think maybe
Times,
they're chasing each other.
well, that could be. But the Times report, you just mentioned the State Department draft. The Times report says President Bush never considered the plans drafted by the State Department or the Pentagon to close Guantanamo. Why not?
I can't talk about what the specific deliberations are and within the administration, but I can tell you that officials at the State Department, at the White House, at the Justice Department, at the Department of Defense are unified in our view that we have a goal of closing Guantanamo. But unfortunately, that is a second-order question. The first order question is, what do you do with the detainees who are in Guantanamo at the moment? You cannot close Guantanamo until you deal with the detainees who are there. Some of them are subject to new legal challenges because of the recent Supreme Court decisions, and some of them are going through the military commission's process. And a great many of them are being returned to either to their home countries or to third countries
All
who
right.
are willing to take them.
Okay, let's get to the specific question of the Uyghurs.
Sure.
A federal appeals court ruled in the administration's favor, thereby temporarily blocking the order to release into the United States 17 Uyghurs from Guantanamo. These men... pardon me, had already been cleared of charges of being
enemy combatants.
So why is it so important to keep these men from reaching the U.S.?
Well, I think that there are a couple of issues there, Diane. One is that while it is agreed, certainly the Department of Defense agrees that these 17 individuals should not be categorized as enemy combatants of the United States. That does not necessarily take us to the leap that they are individuals who Americans would welcome into the United States, and certainly not in violation of existing laws that we have that control access to the United States.
But I gather that there are 17 Uyghur families here in Washington who've offered to take these men
and support them. Yeah, let me be very clear on this, because this is something that not the Uyghurs themselves even would dispute. They were trained in terrorist training camps in Tora Bora under control of the Taliban. Now, regardless of whether they are enemies of the United States, that does not mean that they are necessarily individuals that we would welcome here into the United States.
Susan Baker Manning.
No more than we would. Well, for example, if we knew that there were IRA terrorists who were trained in violence, in the use of violence, we wouldn't necessarily welcome them into the United States.
But these men are not terrorists. That is exactly what the court has been looking at. Is there any evidence that these men are terrorists? The court has looked at that issue. That's why they're not enemy combatants. There's simply no evidence that these men were terrorists of any kind. And this claim that they were in terrorist training camps is just not true. It's true they were in the mountains of Afghanistan, but being in the wrong place at the wrong time doesn't make you a terrorist.
I know that's your view, but there are other views, I haven't seen that disputed. I think it's in fact indisputable that they did receive that kind of training for maybe a different enemy. But regardless, what the judge ordered is to release these individuals without any supervision from the government here in the United States, and in violation of our existing laws, for example. Of our immigration laws, where Congress by statute has said that we should not welcome those who train to overthrow foreign powers.
All right. The U.S. has held these men now for 7 years. A federal judge says they must be released. Mm-hmm. How much longer does the administration believe it should be allowed to find a place to resettle the Uyghurs?
All I can say is that I know the State Department is moving as quickly as possible to help to find third countries who would be willing to take the Uyghurs and accept them in their countries. They're trying very, very hard to do this.
But why would any other country take them if the United States continues to call them terrorists?
Well, look, other states have different views and laws and standards. Certainly the Albanians, who took a number of Uyghurs a number of years ago, had a different view for their domestic country. But what we need to remember is that this is not a one-off issue. What we're dealing with is not just the Uyghurs. Whatever your views are about the Uyghurs, we should not set the precedent for all of those remaining detainees at terrorists, some of whom I think even all of us talking today would agree are in fact terrorists and dangerous terrorists who name the United States as their sworn enemy.
How many people are you talking about, Tony?
Well, there are, the DOD can get you the number, but there are a couple hundred detainees still
who
at Guantanamo.
Have been labeled terrorists.
There are certainly a number of dozens who I think anyone would agree are in fact, experienced, hardened terrorists who name the United States as their sworn enemy.
Tony Fratto.
They could use this as a precedent for, and would, go to the courthouse door using this as a precedent.
Tony Fratto, he's Deputy White House Press Secretary. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Diane.
And to Nuri Turkel, I know you wanted to make a point as to how many of these people within Guantanamo are terrorists. But first, let me remind you, at 10 minutes before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show.
None of the Uyghurs are terrorists. Let me be very clear about that. The government's claim about these Uyghurs have been changed so many times over the course of the last 5 years. When we heard from some of the detainees, Uyghur detainees, that they've been cleared for release as early as 2003. Whenever the political inconvenience or convenience comes up, the government changes its position. It does not make any logical sense while calling them threat and asking others to take them. And here in the United States, Uyghurs feel grateful for the opportunities given to the Uyghur immigrants in the United States, and they feel indebted to return something back to their adopted country. They will embrace them, embrace 17 Uyghurs. They will then provide them jobs, opportunities, language training, counseling. We're here to help. We're here to help the United States government to solve this problem.
No, Francisco.
Diane, I'd like to make one thing clear. The fact that these individuals have been determined to no longer be enemy combatants against the United States
right.
does not mean that a court has determined that these individuals are safe to be admitted into the United States. Those are two very distinct questions.
Why?
Because the test for an enemy combatant against the United States is whether you harbored ill will specifically towards the United States.
Right.
I think what the court did say is that there was not evidence that these individuals harbored ill will towards the United States. But I think that what Mr. Fratto said was right. These men were picked up in Afghanistan at Taliban-controlled military training camps.
That's factually false.
They were not at the Tora Bora Hilton.
Wait a minute, Noel. If I'd like to hear a contradiction, if Susan Baker Manning, who has been working on this case, says that you have just made a false statement, Susan.
Yeah, that's just not right. These men were picked up in Afghanistan by bounty hunters and sold to the U.S. military for $5,000 a head. They were fleeing the bombing in Afghanistan, but again, they're fleeing the violence of the war. They have never borne arms. There's no allegation that they ever did. Certainly not one of them has ever fired a shot in anger. They have never been combatants of any kind, and there's not a claim that they have been.
So. Go ahead.
Well, Diane, that's contrary to what the D.C. Circuit said in its opinion. The D.C. Circuit cited evidence that these individuals were at military training camps in Afghanistan, which, as we all know, prior to September 11th, was controlled by the Taliban. As I was saying, they were not at the Tora Bora Hilton. These were not tourists in Afghanistan who happened to take a wrong turn. That's not to say that they're necessarily terrorists, and I am not saying that they are necessarily terrorists. But the question is, are these individuals safe individuals who we would want to admit in the United States? In making that determination, I think it's perfectly fair to consider the conditions in which they were picked up and, in addition, the fact that, rightly or wrongly, for the last 7 years, they've been held against their will by the United States in Guantanamo Bay. When you put those two things together, I think at least a fair judgment can be made that they are not necessarily safe individuals to enter into the United States.
Right. If I can respond to that,
sure.
two quick things. The judge who ordered them to be released into the United States specifically asked the Department of Justice whether there was any evidence that they could proffer that these men would pose any danger to the United States, and DOJ had nothing. There's no evidence that they put forth on precisely that point when asked by the judge. And the other thing is this idea that we've imprisoned them wrongfully for a long time, and therefore we must continue to imprison them wrongfully because they might be mad at us, is frankly insane.
All right. To Waterford, Michigan. Good morning, Edna. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to bring up something very close to what was just said. I am outraged by the idea that if an innocent person is picked up by bounty hunters and horrendously abused for 7 years, we have to therefore keep them in prison or send them to a place where they're likely to be killed because they might get angry. If there's anything, what we owe them is to put them in a healing environment, and that's what their community has offered.
Nuri Turkale.
I perfectly agree with that statement. You know, in order to help them to get over with their 7 years of long imprisonment and nightmare, we need to offer help, logistic, psychological, human help.
But it doesn't.
Helping them is an American way of going on with
life. It doesn't sound as though that's going to be the way, at least for now.
That's not necessarily the case, Diane. I think we're dealing with 17 different individuals. I think it's altogether possible that the United States will determine that some, maybe even all of them, are eventually safe for admission into the United States. They're not there yet. And let me be clear. The question is not whether we should be holding these individuals indefinitely. I think the United States agrees that these individuals need to be released. The difficult question is where and how to release them. And that's the issue that the government is struggling with right now.
How much longer do you, Susan, believe this is going to take?
Well, I think that we have a schedule in the Court of Appeals where I think it's very unlikely that we're going to get any decision in the case until at least early to midwinter next year. Now,
Next year.
Next year, absolutely.
2009.
That's right. So these men are going to sit in a jail cell, the same jail cell they've been in for 7 years, until the court resolves it, at minimum,
depending on who is elected in November. Do you see that situation changing?
I am hopeful that either Senator Obama or Senator McCain, whoever should win the election, would follow through on their expressed intentions to close Guantanamo.
Susan Baker Manning, Noel Francisco, Nuri Turkel, I want to thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Susan Neighbors. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.